This interview with Dr. Leonid Gurvitz of the Joint Institute for VLBI in Europe is part of the Jodcast. For the full show, visit jodcast.net.
We're joined by Leonid Gurvitz of the Joint Institute for VLBI in Europe, and you were involved in taking measurements of the Huygens probe on Titan going around Saturn. Can you tell us a bit about that?
We were invited to conduct a VLBI observation for Huygens. Of course, before it had become known that something is wrong. The failure of one of radio channels between Huygens and Cassini became known only as it happened during the descent of Huygens in the atmosphere of Titan. But we began our preparation long before that, well, a few years before that. But of course, our role has changed dramatically once people at the control center have realized that something is wrong up there. Then we were immediately alleviated in our position in the mission hierarchy, because only radio astronomers were in the position to save in an important part of the science suit of Huygens. We believe that it was the first VLBI observation in which we operated practically at the quantum limit of detection, not even thermal, but quantum limit.
So by quantum, you meaning picking up individual photons?
Exactly, we counted photons, and our estimate was that our 25-meter class telescope, VLBA Mauna Kea, received something like 20 quants per second for the entire telescope, and still we were able to see interferometric fringes on baseline between this telescope and much larger telescope in Green Bank.
That's essentially 28 photons per second.
20 photons per second per one telescope, and then 600 photons at the Green Bank telescope. But the point is that we have to have fringes to achieve VLBI resolution. And yes, it turned to be possible. There were several key components in the success of this experiment. First of all, we used heavily well-known to people at Merlin, of course, community phase referencing technique. It was a little bit difficult in this case because Titan happened to be where the Keplerian law required, not the existence or convenience for phase referencing. So all the sources in the background around Titan on the time of the mission were very weak. The strongest one was about 45 millijansky. In normal VLBI life, these kind of sources are sources of target sources, not reference sources. But in our case, we had to use this weak source as reference. By the way, Merlin and Jodl Bank facilities did not participate in Huygens observations as such, but they played an important role because we used Merlin to image the field around position of Titan. We now call this Huygens field. And Merlin was key element of preparatory work. We picked up several potential reference sources using Merlin, as well as other facilities, Westerbork, VLA, EVN, and others.
So why was this required to use VLBI to pick up the signal from Huygens? Was there not already something set up by NASA and ESA?
Strangely enough, VLBI was not considered as a mission element, as mission facility at the beginning of the mission. It has to be said that Huygens' project was a very difficult and long-living project. It was proposed in 1982. It was accepted by ESA around 1990. It was under extensive development from 1990 to 97. The launch was in 1997, and Huygens reached its destination, Titan, only in 2004, July 4, 2004. So you see, this is more than 20 years, and of course, in the beginning of this mission, nobody could dream about picking up with VLBI network so weak signals as we did. And for us, the key element was, of course, phase referencing, as well as ability to use a novel model of VLBI delay, which is called now VLBI theoretical delay model. It's a software which allows us to predict what is delay on specific baselines for specific source within solar system. This is a key point, because when you deal with a source so close as planetary target, you have to keep in mind that photons arrive along non-parallel ways to your telescopes. You have to account for near-field effects. It sounds simple when you pronounce this in the words, but when you put it in formulas, you see that it's not that simple, because you have to account for very fine-tuning effects like general relativity effects and gravitational and propagation impacts and different media, etc. But we have now this software. It did work for Huygens. We checked this for much closer target. A year ago, we observed using kind of piggyback of Huygens developments for observing of the first European lunar mission, SMART-1. It was interesting exercise in different way. The signal was very strong, I would say deadly strong, because it happened, the transmitter happened to be at the distance of just one light second, roughly, on Moon, as opposed to Huygens, which was 8 astronomical units, that is 67 light minutes away. But for SMART, we exercised some special effects which are visible when you have a very strong signal, that is diffraction of a signal from spacecraft when spacecraft is behind Moon. So we observe kind of occultation of spacecraft or its transmitter, and for several seconds when the spacecraft is close to limb but behind Moon, you can see clear diffraction pattern. That's a very interesting exercise. To the best of my knowledge, never seen before. And the diffractional pattern which we see is, well, it looks almost like a textbook on physical optics or optical physics, whatever you call it. We believe that this kind of phenomenon can be used in the future for future missions, because the diffraction pattern you see tells a lot about the three-dimensional distribution close to the limb of the source. In other words, you can use this technique for high-precision cartography of the screening body.
So perhaps it would be fair to say that the diffraction pattern that you see isn't exactly due to a flat surface or a spherical surface of the limb.
Definitely.
But you might see some differences which would allow you to infer the structure of the limb.
Exactly. This technique is known, it's been used in optics for some time. In fact, the quasars were detected in optics or identified with radio sources using this kind of technique back in 1963. This technique of lunar occultation was very popular before aperture synthesis and long baseline interferometry came to age. But now we are on the new phase of the spiral of development. We came back to lunar occultation technique with VLBI in hands. That's quite interesting.
Could you do this for other solar system bodies other than the Moon? Could you do this for planets? Could you diffract space probe radio signals around other planets' limbs?
In principle, yes. In practice, it will be much more difficult. We try to estimate what would it take to see similar thing, say, on Mars. But the problem is that Moon practically has no ionosphere, no magnetic field, and you don't deal with electromagnetic propagation phenomena. Well, on Mars it will be totally different. In the first instance, you will deal with propagation in the ionosphere there. Not as strong as some other bodies, but in principle it's doable. Another factor to remember is, of course, geometry. Moon as a screen, as a diffractor, is very convenient. It's relatively close. For Mars, it's totally different thing. The size of the Fresnel pattern will be not terribly convenient for observations. But yes, in principle, we will look into these possibilities.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us on the JODcast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.